It looks like that last exchange of building-to-building defensive fire wobbled the Germans across the lane. Can I rush these fuckers with elements of my rugged 37th Guards and take them out? I'm finally learning Avalon Hill's squad leader after owning it for 40 years. Look over my shoulder at this towering cardboard Shangri-La from 1977.
Half-past despicable, last man to bring it through. Fast raps and critical stack, analytical slap slap. I'm hitting you smack smack, I'm sticking you smack lip to stack chips, all with the lyrical technique. For party crashes, liquor spilling mayhem, punk cops to play them, stupid bitches to slay them. Saw serious biz, no time remains for the cattle defecation. You spitting right in this brain, what the
Oh god, I am so hungover. Usually I don't record hungover, but today's scheduled just doesn't permit my usual cure, which is Xanax, pornography, and several bomb pops, usually with a good 1.5-hour nap somewhere in there. You can sequence it any way you want. People say you need to rehydrate, but that's fucking pedestrian. Bomb pops have plenty of water. Now, if you're feeling really bad and it's hitting peak summer heat, here's the pro version of the cure. Just double the Xans and the bomb pop intake by eating one while you let another one melt inside one of your holes. It will take you to a place utterly free of pain. Note of caution, do not try this technique on the back patio in view of your neighbors, curled up on your side and moaning. The general populace does not understand the prerogatives of self-care in the 21st century. This is episode 94 of Breakup Gaming Society, in which a middle-aged man, that's me, your host and solo microphone trench fighter, the Lord Chief Rocka number one, examines life through the triple lens of board games, booze, and hip-hop. Three segments, straight up and down. Let's get right to work. Drink of the week. Guest writer and microbrew beer slinger Fritz Goddard returns with a summer song composed from behind the taps of Golden City Brewing in Golden, Colorado. He's picked out his favorite pours of the season. He outdid himself this time. It's going to make you thirsty. Game of the week. Squad Leader, the Avalon Hill classic World War II infantry combat game from 1977. I thought the old copy I own would deliver no more pleasure than the occasional whiff of a used bookstore and imagined battlefield thrills, but lo and behold, our homeboy, Noisy Andrew, down at Perth, is teaching me the dang thing online. Find out what that's like. Track of the week. It's Punk Shit by High C. Yep, it's summer, so I'm getting into some G-Funk again from 1991. You're going to get into it, too. Now we're going to turn it over to Fritz, because here comes Drink of the Week.
I kicked it, yup, yup, I kicked it, come on, you couldn't bang with this if your name was Genghis Khan.
So if you're up on things, you've met comic, writer, and beer tender Fritz Goddard back in episode 83, where he served up his favorite winter stouts from the tap line of Golden City Brewing. He's back for summer with some truly pro insider recommendations about how to cultivate a proper summer buzz in one of the Denver metro area's coziest and coolest beer gardens. Among the criteria for his choices, how do these drafts look during the magic hour? Lights, camera, action. Fritz Recos go as follows. There's nothing better than pouring beers at a beer garden in the summer. Watching people bask in the summer sun while they bond with homies is at least as rewarding as being a teacher and probably rivals what an EMT feels at, like after they save a drowning victim. But as rewarding as the job is in the summer months, winters at a beer garden are as depressing as a midnight Monday open mic night at a vegan coffee shop. People don't catch up over pitchers of beers in the winter, or if they do, it's not at an open-air, dog-friendly beer garden. Colorado weather may be mild, but it isn't mild to the point of the masses enjoying open-air beer consumption year-round. It mostly means your winter coat can be more stylish than functional. And what keeps me going during those dark, cold months of the year? Well, it's pouring beers at just the right time every afternoon so that the setting sun hits the pint in just the right way to make the beer glow. The magic 20-minute window when the sun beams directly through the front doors of the empty tap room and makes our beers look as divinely as inspired as they taste is a brief reminder that sometimes the universe doesn't actively seek our destruction, and in fact has a few hints of beauty waiting for our distracted minds to notice. It only lasts a few moments, but it is enough of a reminder that winter doesn't last forever. The beer that looks the most beautiful when all lit up is our pink guava bomber. The hazy pink sour looks just like the sky as the sun peeks over the eastern horizon at dawn, and I'm sure there are some beer aficionados, possibly even our own brewer, who will be muttering to themselves about how beers are not supposed to be exposed to direct sunlight and it will ruin the taste. Yeah, sure, that could be true, but I'm willing to bet whatever element of the taste of the beer that is ruined is outpaced by amazing visuals. Like early Coen Brothers films, sometimes you can have style and substance. For a small fleeting window in the depths of winter, it looks like I can drink the sunrise. The Pink Guava Bomber is a kettle sour, so it doesn't have the same back-of-mouth shock of the more traditional tart sours. And with the equivalent of a pound of guava in each glass, this beer is full of distinct and mature fruit flavors. Unlike the saccharine alcoholic Kool-Aid the Colonel served me on my last visit to Starkville, editor's note, Fritz is referencing the Leinenkugel Berry Weiss we drank during his visit to Starkville in episode 92, first beer ever panned on this show. It was indeed ass crack, straight up and straight down. The only thing that went wrong that night, end editor's note. This beer is bold as soon as it hits the tongue, but mellows in the mouth and provides a combo of crispness and tartness that makes this the most drinkable of all the summer beers. If you've heard of GCB, you've probably heard of the Pink Guava Bomber, so I'm not breaking any new ground with this recommendation. So to spice things up, let's make niche recommendations for this, the nichiest of niche podcasts. I'm going to recommend the Guavalution. This is a pint of 50-50 mix of the wonderful aforementioned Pink Guava Bomber and the brewery's flagship IPA, Evolution. The combo is a great mix, and with the PGB, which clocks in at an already healthy 7.1% ABV, adding Evolution won't knock you out any more than a solo bomber. The hoppiness of the Evolution adds a grounding taste without muting the tartness or guava notes, and it still keeps that beautiful pink color. So hopefully, this mixed drink will entice the Colonel to enjoy a sunny afternoon in the beautiful Golden Valley before the summer is done. And there's a new offering you can slam while the sun tickles your cheeks and that thinning part on the crown of your head. But not at the cost of your sterling reputation as the lightest of lightweights. I speak of Dragonfrucht. Fruited sour with dragon fruit. It's just as colorful, but much lighter than GCB's Bomber series. The perfect summer beer for little babies who prefer to keep their wits about them, their hands uncuffed, and their pants unpissed in. Cowards. End quote. I have to say, this is an inviting picture, Fritz. This inflames my dormant wanderlust. This beer garden sounds like, for a few golden hours, I could almost forget I live in the world's richest failed state. Strong work, brother. Here comes Game of the Week.
I kicked it, yup, I kicked it, come on. You couldn't bang with this if your name was Genghis Khan.
So to answer the question that I posed in the cold intro, yes. Yes, I could take the building, but it cost me 6 squads of men just getting across that lane. Their sprint crossed the merest sliver of an alert German machine gun squad's field of fire. An expensive jog, but what the Russians lack in command acumen and support weapons in Scenario 1, the guards' counterattack, they make up for in numbers. The survivors enter the building and stomp out the remaining Germans there in both hand-to-hand fighting and a short, lethal exchange of fire down hallways and staircases. This old hex map and its tiny counters now seem lit from within. Getting to finally play this game feels like finding an old roadster in a barn and getting it on the road. A model still driven today by a dedicated subset of wargame lovers because they love this legendary system and its successor, Advanced Squad Leader, so much. Starting to see why. So, a bit of background for our listeners who either don't know anything about wargames or who think they don't like them but who are wrong. Squad Leader was released in the 1970s by Avalon Hill Publishing, one of the two big strategy publishers of the time, the other being rival SPI. A whole generation of military history nuts who wanted to fight the big battles out for themselves with historically accurate units and conditions were relitigating the Eastern Front, the great 19th century wars of the continent, the U.S. Civil War, and more. There was a race to put out creative and rigorous designs that fed these subterranean armchair generals the right balance of scale, realism, and strategy that also included interesting ways to model the chaotic chance of the battlefield. Squad Leader entered on the scene as a full-on squad-level, platoon simulation exercise. The main categories of action are mostly firing and moving, but almost every real-world consideration of those fundamental activities are governed by formal metrics. Did you move before you fired? What's your terrain in relation to your targets? How much stuff are you hauling when you move, and across what? How's your morale? When your rifle squad freaked out and ran, which happens in this game because sustained machine gun fire can riffle shuffle anybody's nervous system. Do they have to seek cover in Hex Kilo 5 or Lima 4? Every consideration is codified in a rulebook and reference cards whose tables look like they might have been purloined from the working real-life command HQ. Inventory fire tables, close combat tables, support weapons charts, movement, terrain, and even a droll little chart for what happens if you try to sneak around in a sewer. Roll a die. 1 through 4, successful. 5 through 6, lost. Think of the granular combat considerations of, say, Dungeons and Dragons, pointed at its operational essence, except you don't have to think up what your characters would say around the campfire. The action is the story, and it's a vivid one. But I don't have to think about sewers yet, thankfully. In addition to its dense but well-written rules and the cohesion of its modeling, the squad leader's designers also rolled out a tool they called Programmed Instruction. A series of 12 scenarios, 6 from the Eastern Front with the Russians versus the Germans, another 6 from Western Europe late in the war with Germans versus the U.S., and it feeds the complexity to you in spoonfuls. Well, they're big spoonfuls. Section 1 is a firefight in Stalingrad that only puts you in charge of men and machine guns. Scenario 2 lets you play around with flamethrowers for the first time, use demo charges, smoke cover, concealed units, and learn the quantitative joys of individual unit fanaticism, and so on until you're finally able to graduate yourself to even more complicated stuff like vehicles and artillery. God, I'm so fucking hungover. Where the hell is a paragraph? What's a paragraph? But even Scenario 1 is a beast if you come at it cold. Bigger beast if you have nobody who will attempt it with you. While simultaneously exploring my seasonal affective disorder, that's an amateur prognosis, and GMT's storm above the Reich over the winter, I sang this Jeremiad in episode 86. I was talking to dudes on Board Game Geek's Squad Leader Forum about the copy of the game that the moms got me for Christmas in 1979. She knew I was into World War history and war movies because, weren't we all? I was 9. I opened it, gawped at each bit of it, put it away. Some of the dudes on the BGG forum mentioned a common denominator, my big brother and his friends. They got to learn it under the wing of some adolescents, and I realized it doesn't matter how cool these games are unless somebody is there with you, moored at the point of fascination and raised on the broth of brotherhood. And I stopped shopping a bunch of war games when I realized I wasn't shopping for a game. I was shopping for a big brother I never had, or friends I had and don't have anymore, end quote. As it turns out, I did have a big bro to teach me. When I repeated this complaint on Discord to longtime friend of the show, Noisy Andrew of Party Meeple, he made this thrilling claim. He knows all the rules for Scenario 1 by heart, notching a 100% accuracy rate when his last opponent looked up his rule citations. Now this was a lantern I could follow into this impenetrable cardboard Shangri-La. So we downloaded the Vassal tabletop emulator. He even did the heavy lifting of figuring out the software and the squad leader module. We are now in our 3rd week of successfully straddling the Perth-Starkville time zones for one-turn sessions. I'm having the time of my life. We're playing Scenario 1 for a second time now, and I'm getting a little bit grasp on the cycle of the turns and rules, and I'm learning to look for that one early exchange of fire that tells me I have to shore up a flank and keep my head down, or follow that wisp of blood in the water to a weak spot that's ripe for the chomping. I go to bed after we play this with footage drawing itself in my head. Even misfortunes that happened on my side of the ledger are vivid and weirdly satisfying. So now that Noisy has given me a working frame of the action sequence, I now have a reason to set up my physical copy at home so I can retrace the finer points of the rules. They're a lot easier to read once you've seen some action. My general experience with crunchy games is that digesting the crunch is not only a minor thrill of achievement, it delivers a richer experience, which is why what's happening here is way beyond a simple thumbs-up or thumbs-down proposition. Hex Encounter war games are a subset of a subset. On sight, these creations are either hilariously off-putting or they're as irresistible as the deep memory drumbeat of the sun that lures the characters of J.G. Ballard's The Drowned World South to vanish into the book's florid, mutated Triassic swamps. While I cover newer games, the level of passion and creativity in tabletop design is boggling. I've been digging backwards more in all my media consumption, as things redolent with real human work are more and more appealing as the automated, the synthetic, the simulated engulf everything. Why fret about whether the sludge I'm looking at on the feed today is human or bot when I can pick up, say, The Joseph Conrad book on my furnace cabinet, and no, a human made it. No guessing. No looking down the mirror hall. Regular consciousness and representing it with language, as we'll find in the wrestling mass matches of the great artists, is complicated enough. Why the hell do I need profit-motivated Silicon Valley mutants posing profit-driven additional conversations on top? The inexhaustible riches of the near past are there for the taking. Squad leader is categorically beautiful for this reason. Looking at the hundreds of tiny cardboard counters, you can hear the chug of an offset press as the Avalon Hill team, probably wild with sleeplessness, watches the first proof run emerge. Reading the steps for managing a unit that's crumpled under fire, you can feel the long hours alone and the waypoints of fierce crosstalk as assumptions are playtested, and playtested again and again. Right as I finish this section of the script, I see the mail gal put a white package at the door of my addition. That would be the specialized squad leader counter trays I ordered. That means I'll be spending some time this weekend with a cold one on the table, happily clipping and sorting every single piece, fully immersed in the small and happy ministrations of one of the many small pockets of the world that VCs and private equity haven't figured out how to ruin. You'll never find me today, you bastards. Today I am unprofitable and therefore, if just for a few hours, free. Track of the week is next. One of my favorite minor side hobbies is poking around on an album that had a hit track to see if there was any stronger material on there. I vaguely remember High C's I'm Not Your Puppet coming out of more than one speaker around 1991, although I didn't pay much attention to it. I was getting a big lift from a ruthless Megatron Bloody Mary. This is a weapon of mass destruction that made its debut all the way back on episode 81, and I was getting tired of clipping and sorting squad leader counters. I still had a whole sprue to go, and I was starting to get sloppy, so I started poking around High C's Scanless LP to see what else it has. I see DJ Quick's thumbprints all over this thing, so that's a good sign. But the track I keep landing on from this one was produced by High C himself and Tony A. It's called Punk Shit, and the first thing that grabs me is how packed it is with trains of rapid-fire samples and how it swings. I got slung to the ground, took one to the eye, but a Compton ass nigga won't cry. So I dusted off my clothes and I ran to the Compton. Spark for a minute, said fuck this. On the way back to Compton went to get the gap, but they knew that day I'd be coming back. But I didn't go back on the same day, cause the nigga ain't stupid, okay? I love the switch-ups here. In the second verse, High C is delivering fairly standard gang-affiliated bars. I mean, honestly, if you played this for me the day before, I would have guessed it might have been AMG. Couldn't tell them apart because I'm not familiar enough with the material. But again, listen to how busy this track is. I mean, okay, noted on the death threats and all that, but this track sets out to entertain, and it never lets up. So there you have it. Selections from Punk Shit by High C from 1991. Not a new track by any means, but it will figure largely in my summer weekend playlist. It feels right for June. That's it for episode 94. Breakup Gaming Society will return in 2 weeks. We're going to hear a childhood story from my LinkedIn buddy Justin about playing Axis and Allies as a kid. Another one I feel like I should have played but never got to. So we're going to raid his memory bank for that one. If you like how this whole thing is going so far, encouragement is always accepted on the donate page, and thank you gifts always find their way to my donors within a week or so. Give them a look, or if you've already spent your discretionary budget on popsicles, whiskey, and sedatives, share a link to an episode where you feel I did a particularly good job, or drop a review somewhere. Until next time, this is the Lord Chief Rock Number 1, signing off. May you fight long and well.
Sounds like the kettle's boiling on the stove. I'm due for a brew. You get me? I don't think you do.